Hello, my fine friends in the destination marketing world. Welcome to episode 6 of Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, CMO from Visit Myrtle Beach, joined today, as always, with Adam Stoker.
Hey, everybody. Excited to be here again.
Your tone doesn't always match the words, man. You got to give it a bit more oomph. Come on.
Yeehaw! I'm excited to be here, everybody.
You turned really Texan. I'm not sure what that was. We're not alone today, and hopefully this guy can bring some sanity back to the show. But we're joined with a good friend of mine and industry guru extraordinaire, Alon. I don't know, I messed your name up. Amir Alon. I was going to say Alon Amir. You're Amir Alon, of course. The unforgettable, but I forgot. Amir Alon, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, they usually call me Hey You, so that's okay.
Hey You. That's great. Hey, I've embarrassed myself on every one of these episodes, so I'm just going to plug right on through. We'll let this go. So now it's all uphill from here, downhill, whichever way you want to look at it. You can screw up and no one will care because I already messed up your name. But Amir, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about why people should care about you being on the show and what you have to say?
Well, I don't know why they should care about me, but listen, I've been around a little while. I think I'm about to celebrate almost 36 years in the travel and tourism industry here as we wrap up this year. Spent most of my career as a destination marketer, and then for the last 9.5 years, I've had the pleasure of being at the helm of Longwoods International. If you haven't heard of Longwoods, we're a market research consultancy that specializes in the travel and tourism industry, but chances are if you're a DMO and you're watching this episode, you've probably come across this once or twice. So that's why you asked me, I think.
Well, that and you give the greatest dinner parties I've ever experienced in my life. So if you ever get an invite or an opportunity to go to dinner at an event with Amir, or if you just want to live vicariously through him, he's got an Instagram account, Amir Eats. Is that what it is? What's the handle for you?
Alon Eats. Yeah.
And it's
You haven't tuned into my podcast yet then.
I have not. Plug that real quick.
It's called You Gonna Eat That? my wife and I have a couple that we've been great friends for years, and we go out to eat quite often together. And her husband and I, we kind of have the banter like we do right here, and kind of always he's the service snob, I'm the food snob, and we always have this little banter. And our wives, beginning of the year, said, "Will you just take this thing on the road already?" And so nice. We decided to open, because we don't have enough to do in our lives. We started a little podcast a few months ago, and here we are.
Yeah, passion projects are the best. That's amazing. I will tune in. We'll drop a link to that in the show notes so people can follow along, because it's
perfect. You know how to eat, people. You're having a hard time sleeping. Put us.
Well, Amir, I got to say one thing. I'm a little jealous right now. I have never attended an Amir Alon dinner.
And you're kidding me. Oh,
it feels like a bucket list item after the way Stuart described it.
Done. Let's figure out where you and I are crossing paths on the road again sometime soon. And in. We'll
pump
Stuart out and put your seat in. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine. I've had the honor of doing that twice. So certainly your turn, Adam. And it's two of the top. Unfair. I'd say two of the top 10 dining experiences I've had in my entire life. And
wow.
With Amir. They're just unbelievable. So yeah, he knows how to do it right. But we're not here to talk about the culinary scene today, right? Our topic today is going to be talking about residents. But before that, Amir, you haven't witnessed this yet, I'm sure, but this is the greatest segment in all of destination marketing. It's time for Stu's News. Where's the jingle?
Okay, this is where I'm a little upset, and I want to speak directly to the audience here and to my LinkedIn friends, followers, community. Stuart clearly said that if I was able to get 100 listens or 100 likes or comments or engagements on my post about the jingle, that we would be able to have this amazing, awful AI-generated jingle for Stu's News every time. And I have not gotten enough engagement. I am, however, going to continue to repost it until people will finally give us the engagement to get you to agree to it, because it's just too good.
Now, are you changing the rules? You're moving the goalposts a little bit? Because to me, the people have spoken. You tried, you failed, you know. It's fine. People don't want to hear your jingle, and that's okay. If if the people speak, the people speak. We should honor that. But now you're saying you're going to do it accumulatively. You're going to let people like over. You could do it like 100 posts. You're bound to get 100 likes. So I declare.
Well, and I may add them all together. That's the great thing about it is I may add all those together and use that to equal 100.
I declare shenanigans. Let's jump into today. So I'm going to share my screen real quick, and then let's see if I can find the right one. Yeah. So this comes from our friends in Copenhagen. So I've never been to Denmark. I would love to go. And, you know, they're always ranked high on lists of the happiest places in the world. So when they do something, you pay attention. Now, the odd thing about this one is this is a campaign they ran in 2022, but I came across it yesterday from Destinations International. Their newsletter went out and they were calling out this as a really interesting campaign. So Copenpay is what this is called. And essentially what it was a barter agreement between the visitors and the local businesses. So if you came to Copenhagen and you did something good, you picked up some trash, you traveled by public transportation, or you cleaned water, you could get value back in the form of ice cream or a free tour or a bunch of stuff. And so this is a campaign they ran, I think, from June to December of 2022 is when it ran. They had about 24 participants. This is the website that I'm showing right now. Go check it out, and we'll put the link in the news. But depending on the attraction, you could different things would get you different prizes. So it was neat. And I thought, Adam, I wanted to talk about this primarily because we talked about Barcelona in a previous episode and what they were doing to try to change the behavior of the visitors. This took this to a whole nother level, and there was actually incentives for the visitors to change their behavior in this. So I'm gonna throw it first to you, Adam, and then to our guest, Amir. Like, what do you think about this campaign?
Yeah, when we talked about Barcelona's campaign a couple of weeks ago, I think you and I both came to a similar conclusion that the kind of heavy-handedness that they were using to try to communicate to the visitors that they'd better follow the rules or there's going to be big problems, you know, there was no incentive. And usually when there's figures of authority, visitors or people in general have a tendency to want to push back against something that feels authoritative. And that's exactly how that campaign felt from Barcelona. This, I mean, you can get immediate value from doing what the destination wants you to do. There is an incentive for each type of climate-friendly activity that you can do, and you can benefit from it. I mean, why wouldn't a visitor take climate-friendly action because they're going to get rewarded for it? I think this is a much more appropriate response to some of the issues that you have with visitation in your destination and sustainability. And I would love to see more destinations incentivize good behavior in a way that actually can move the needle for visitors.
Yeah, I feel like this was the carrot to Barcelona's stick, right? Barcelona was doing a lot of finger wagging and you better or else. And this was completely the opposite. It was, hey, this let's have a value exchange here. Let's do something that makes you feel good and benefits everyone, and especially our residents. But also, you're going to get value out of that in the form of free ice cream. And who doesn't like free ice cream? So, Amir, what are your thoughts on this?
Let me just real quick, Amir, have you jump in. The desired outcome is the same from each destination, but one, in my opinion, detracts from the brand and the future of the brand, and one builds the brand and builds the relationship with the visitor. And I think this is a great kind of polarity here of how your actions can either hurt your brand or help it. They nailed it.
Amir, what'd you think?
I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with both of you. I think, you know, a brilliant move on Copenhagen's part. I remember this when it first launched and thinking to myself, wow, that's pretty cool. I'd love to know, you know, running the research company, I'd love to know how much behavior was actually modified, you know, push comes to shove. But here's the one thing we know from talking to travelers for many years is that most travelers want to do good. They want to follow the rules, but you know they don't want the heavy handedness like you're talking about from the Barcelona approach, but you know they want to do good. They don't want, you know, if they feel that they can make a difference, that's a positive for them, and if they can feel like they're doing something like a local would, you know, if the Danish are, you know, more in tune to, you know, pick up the trash when they walk down the street and they see it, if they're more in tune to ride the bike versus, you know, take the Uber or whatever, That's great, and it adds to that. And so I think, it wins on five different levels. My only thing would be, on this, the only potential other side of it, this was clearly on the honor system. You just had to take a picture like you and a bike, or you holding a empty water bottle, throwing in a recycling bin or something like that. And there, my only thing about that is, but we also know travelers at the end of the day. They will also quite often default to convenience. So, maybe you can modify some behavior in terms of picking up trash, volunteering for a little bit to do something, some type of activity. But I think at the end of the day, if the museum's closing in an hour and you really want to see the museum and biking is going to take 30 minutes versus 10 minutes in an Uber, you know what the traveler is going to do, right? Because they're only in Copenhagen for so long. The Tivoli Gardens is on their bucket list. They got to get to the Tivoli before it closes. Whatever those things are, that's going to happen. So there's some behavior we're just never going to be able to alter, because at the end of the day, we are humans and we are driven by our desires to take care of ourselves first sometimes. But it is a great, great program. Love it.
I'm with you. I mean, I would love to see the performance. I know they stopped it, right, to say, hey, let's analyze the impact that it's had, and they haven't relaunched it. It's been a couple of years, so that maybe tells you something. I would love to have someone from Copenhagen to come on and talk about the campaign and what they learned from it, and maybe what version two looks like. One of the things I love about these type of campaigns is, not only are they functionally good, the utility of it is good, and it's performing, and it's going to drive some folks, but it has that sort of 10x multiplier that people pay attention to it, right? The fact we're talking about it, they got a lot of news coverage, which every one of those earned impressions changes the perception and the thoughts that people have about Copenhagen, And so I love campaigns that have that 10x multiplier like this. It's hard to do without looking like you're trying to do it, but when you do it, man, it can pay big dividends.
And everybody who got that free ice cream cone, next thing they did on Instagram, got my free ice cream for riding my bike in Copenhagen, or whatever. And you know that was going to happen.
Yeah, there's a virality to it that definitely is. That word of mouth is still the most powerful form of transmitting anything, right? And so anytime you can turn an audience or a visitor into your secret sales force, into your advocate, it's gonna grow. It's
Well,
awesome. So
and on that note, think about from the Barcelona example, how many people posted, look at this crap from the signs and things like that, right? And so again, this is much more of a brand building scenario.
yeah, so let's kind of sort of segue from this into the topic. So we're going to talk about, are residents the most important stakeholder for DMO? And I think one of the things about this campaign is it really is a good, it's a good feeling for the residents, because now you've got these evil tourists coming in that are actually doing good for your community. So I think there's a piece to this that turns inward towards the community, which I love. So let's segue in. So there's the question, are residents our most important stakeholder? Mia, make your case. Do you agree with the statement? Do you disagree with the statement, and why?
Wholeheartedly agree. I mean, and you look at Barcelona as that great example, right? It is nothing can happen in your community smoothly, easily, productively, unless your residents are generally buying into it. It was what Jack Johnson from DI said it, what, on stage at the annual convention in 2018, when he got on stage and he said, as DMOs, we've been looking at it backwards. The most important customer is not our visitor, it's our resident, and he's absolutely right. Using our experience, we started doing resident sentiment research about 8 years ago, and my phone would start ringing regularly with folks asking, do you have any research on visitor management, over tourism, whatever terms you want to call it. But we also started getting calls saying, you know what? I've been working on this waterfront development project in my community for 10 years. And we had meetings and we had conversations and we got all our partners lined up and so forth. And then it's finally happening. We got the funding in place. We're at the groundbreaking. And all of a sudden, there's 50 residents out of nowhere show up with picket signs. cursing about this thing in here. And my first question was, well, were they part of your conversations?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. We have done, you know, as destination marketers and as a former one, I'll speak to that as well. Think about what we've traditionally done in terms of communicating to our stakeholders and our residents, right? We, once a year during National Travel and Tourism Week, we all have our new numbers on how many visitors we had and what the economic impact is and what the tax benefit for the community is and number of jobs sustained, all these wonderful facts and figures. And we hold an open house in our visitor center with free punch and cookies and pizza. And we have our little press conference and we invite the mayor or the city councilman or, you know, whoever there. And we do that. And then we would, you know, lock our door at the end of the night and resume marketing to the rest of the world, everybody but our own community, right? Telling our story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pandemic was a great accelerator for this notion because so many DMOs were then forced to market inward for a little bit. And for many residents, that's the first time they realized they had a DMO in their community. But at the end of the day, we weren't engaging our residents. They were our lowest value customer for many reasons. Even, you know, think about as you spend your limited marketing dollars as a destination marketing organization, right? It's that you're seeking that visitor that's looking for a marketable pleasure trip, right? It's they're deciding, you know, between Myrtle Beach and Virginia Beach, for their next getaway. Myrtle Beach, of course, for the sake of this conversation.
Obviously.
Of course. But the reality is even those who are coming to visit friends or relatives, we tell ourselves, you know, we delude ourselves into thinking, well, they only stay on couches and they only stay, you know, in the guest bedrooms and they're not spending nearly as much and blah, 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 blah. And we can't influence them very much in activities. So we just weren't geared towards that. But at the end of the day, the resident, they can make or break you and their attitudes. And sometimes it has nothing to do with tourism. It just has to do with the issues that are for competing limited resources. Because what is the residents' priority in the community? I want good schools for my kids. I want a safe neighborhood where they can go and play. You know, I want to have good roads where we can get from place to place. I want to have, you know, a great quality of life here and that. And a lot of this basic infrastructure, which a thriving tourism economy actually supports and helps sustain, contributes to, but they don't make that direct connect. So the visitor, a long story short, the resident is the most important customer.
That's a hard yes from you. And I'm going to edge to your side of the argument completely so that Adam has to take the opposite, because I do agree.
Bring it on.
I'll push a little further as well, Amir, because I think if you look at why DMOs exist, or at least how they were formed, right? When we look back to Detroit in, what was it? It was called the Convention and Businessman's League or something, was the group that created the first DMO in like 1896. And it was a bunch of businesses that came together and said, hey, if we work, pool our resources, we can help each other to profit and to have a higher quality of life, to your point. That's why we exist. And I don't think it's just that the stakeholders are our most, the residents are our most important stakeholder. I think improving the quality of life for our residents is our core purpose. Like, that's why we exist, period. Like, everything else ladders up to that. If we do our job, it should be to improve the quality of life of the residents, period.
We make communities better, period. That's it.
Yeah. Exactly. And so whether that's the businesses, the people that live here, the retirees, it doesn't matter. Like, we're here to improve the community, improve the quality of life for everyone that's a part of that community. And so that if we start from that place, everything else we do is it you got to keep that in mind. It can't be an afterthought, right? It has to be at the beginning of the conversation. So when I do this to promote tourism or to bring this segment in, is that having a positive impact on the community? Has to be at the front of the conversation. So that's my opinion. And we're really beginning to turn that way very rapidly in Myrtle Beach. We have not done a great job engaging our local stakeholders. We do a resident sentiment study every year. And I'm sure you're going to talk about that because it's something Longwood's office, but we haven't really done a good job with the communication side of hitting the drumbeat constantly in selling that or sharing that information about why what we're doing is impactful in a positive way to the community. But I'd love to, at this point, seeing as we've built this steel man, to hear Adam completely disagree with us. But I'm just
Well,
kidding. You can agree with us if you
I
want,
love
man.
the framing and setup, but I actually I do disagree with you both on a certain level, and I agree that in a vacuum and in a perfect world, the resident is our most important customer. But in our Stu's News segment, the and you know jingle coming, just to be clear, but in our Stu's
Or
News
not.
segment, we talked about incentives, and the incentives in the industry do not match what you guys are saying here. And what I mean by that is most DMOs would like, or DMO professionals would like, to make the lives of their residents better. But the incentives are to maximize the financial impact for your hotel, your stakeholders, and the incentives do not match making the lives of the residents better. In fact, there's some destinations who are in fact, Stuart, you may even have some of this, that are outlawed from spending money to message to their local residents, or even to spend money within the destination to message to travelers that are in the destination, which means our incentives don't even allow us, in some cases, to communicate to the residents what's going on and how our tourism activities, events, resources can benefit the local. And so I love the principled approach of, we believe that our job is to make the lives of the residents better. And I agree with that. But I don't think the structure of the industry allows that to be your primary objective because, you know, Stuart, you talk a lot about cathedral building, where the work that we do today might benefit the community in 10, 15 years. We may not even be here when that true benefit hits. The reality is most destinations are evaluated on an annual basis, which means the question is, okay, well, was the work you did this year successful this year? Which means your long-term 3, 5, 7 year initiatives are de-incentivized, and those are the types of initiatives that would actually benefit the resident. And so I really feel like if we're truly as an industry going to agree that the resident is our primary stakeholder, the primary audience that we need to make sure that we're nurturing, I think the incentives have to change, or you're going to end up still with an angry politician with an agenda being able to completely derail the efforts that we're doing to try to make a community better.
I sort of agree, but I'll let Amir go first because I got some strong opinions about what you said.
I knew Stuart would, but Adam, I think your focus is off in terms of the, it's not the incentive, it's the KPIs. You touched on it, but I think it's really the KPIs. It's are the KPIs that destination marketing organizations are evaluated under, are those the right KPIs in there? Now, yeah, some of that, of course, how many room nights and how much room tax generated and how much, all the heads and beds at the end of the day and group booking volume and all this stuff, really important. But we also need to look at other KPIs, and as you know, in our industry, we've been talking about shifting KPIs, and of course, the resident sentiment, that buy-in is really important into that factor. At the end of the day, you need to have this community alignment, right? You need to understand the difference between capacity and comfort, something you guys have dealt with in Myrtle Beach. What's the capacity of the destination to absorb visitor volume visitors, and what's the comfort level with the community in there? Is it, there's a fine line somewhere. Is it 85%? Is it 90%? Is it 50%? Who knows? And it varies for everyone. And Adam, I'm sorry, I'm not picking on you, buddy, but you're clearly that one kid in grade school that when the teacher said, "Now the sky outside is blue," and you said, "Well, ma'am, why isn't it green?" So
That's a he nailed the impression of you, Adam. That's a spot on impression.
But
Honestly sounds like me.
the reality is, the whether you want to talk about the incentives or the KPIs, they vary from destination to destination. And I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where there's a universally accepted one rule block of KPIs that's going to fit, square peg in a round hole for every single destination out there. But I think if you're having the dialogue with your community stakeholders, your residents, that you can agree upon where's that sweet spot, where's that comfort level, and build your KPIs around that. That's my
So can I disagree ahead, with both of you a little
pile
bit?
On,
Yeah.
Stuart.
Yeah, I want to disagree with both of you at the same time.
Good.
This is a fun show, right?
Have at it.
For a disagreeable person like me that's an Enneagram 8 and a challenger, this is perfect, because like I agree with a lot of what you're both saying. And to your point first, Amir, the KPIs are important, but they're one factor. They're a tool that we use. But I think oftentimes we hang our hat on KPIs and we miss the point, because you can get up and say, you know, we got this much revenue, or this saved residents this much dollars, or whatever it is, or ROI is X. People won't remember that. We got to tie that back to a real thing, tangible thing that people feel, you know. So you got to follow up KPIs with storytelling, with real impact on the community. So I think that if we do that right, then I think we're going to be just fine. To Adam's point, I don't think it's a lack of, I don't think it's a misalignment of incentives. I think it's a misalignment of perspective. And I think it all depends on your temporal vantage point. I think as an individual working for a DMO, we are stewards of our community. Like, that's how we need to look at it. We are endowed with resources, whether that's financial or time or whatever, and we are asked on behalf of our community to invest those resources to the maximum impact to the quality of life. And we get to choose how we spend our time. We get to choose how we focus. And some people in the industry focus a lot on the bureaucracy and the what they can't do and the things that you're talking about that hold them back, right? But I think there are others, and a growing number in the industry, that are focused on a longer term time frame. And instead of chasing performance for the next 12 months, they're thinking about what sustains us as an industry and in as a community for the next 10, 20, 30 years. And so their purview, their temporal perspective is different. And I think you have to operate like that, because if we go for the quick and easy wins, we're always going to run into this. We're trying to drive as many heads in beds as we can. And that's inevitably going to end up in a situation like Barcelona. But if we stop and say, okay, what are we really here to do? What's the framework and the incentives and the friction points that we're working with? And how do we navigate them? Then I think you can come through it. Like, yes, I can't use some of our dollars because they're restricted to advertise to my community, right? But I can, over time, build a database, a social following, and integrate myself with the local community so I can communicate them without having to pay advertising dollars, right? So I think it depends a lot on your time perspective, your temporal purview, in how you choose to behave as a steward for the community.
I think my rebuttal to that would be that you may have a little bit of a blind spot because of the destination that you're in. For one, I think you guys have a very healthy budget. I think you have a lot of stakeholder alignment where you can communicate your vision, and you know the board is supportive in a lot of cases. And I've dealt with a lot of smaller destinations who, you know, I'll never forget one of my first board meetings that I went to for a destination that was one of our clients. That this old guy raises his hand and says, can't we, and sorry to word it that way, but he says, can't we just advertise in the phone book and people will find us? And I mean, that this is in 2012. It's not like it was 2001, right? And I think there's a lot of destinations where the things that would really make you successful in Myrtle Beach running the DMO will lose you your job in a small destination. I've watched too many people try to work on projects that are really going to benefit the residents. And I've watched them lose their jobs even after doing such a good thing. And so maybe I'm a little jaded by some of the things that I've seen in the industry, but I believe that small destinations, when they try to focus on the residents and focus on initiatives that will make the residents' lives better, run into a whole lot more bureaucratic issues than maybe larger destinations that have a more sophisticated board and a more robust budget.
Amir, you want to comment on that?
I've seen it with the small guys and I've seen it with the big guys too. I think it just matters what the political culture is in the destination, what kind of relationship that destination has built with the various layers of stakeholder groups in there. But I think you also go back into that, you know, the one conversation that if our good friend Bill Geist was sitting here, it would be reevaluating what the whole funding model structure of the destination organization should be, right? Because how many times, and I go back to my early days at DMO, I remember my first meeting that ever brought up lodging tax, and there's the hoteliers in the room sitting there around the table going, well, of course you're going to do exactly what we ask because we're the ones that pay your budget. And of course, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, unless you're sleeping in your own hotel paying lodging tax, you're really not beat your visitors, your guests that are paying my budget, you know, that, and you shouldn't be touching that money anyway. It goes, you know, go to the county or the city or wherever. I think, you know, to your point, Adam, there is that, you know, there is the master that generates the majority of the lodging tax, and how is that, you know, and I think that biases some of the behavior, of course.
Well, can I ask you guys a question real quick? Because what I'm trying to get at is for the people who aren't necessarily in the situation where just focusing on the resident as their, like, making the lives better for the residents as their primary role, if they're not in a destination that supports that, and these are the ones that roll their eyes when DI stands on stage and says that the residents are the most important stakeholder, and then these guys say, well, try telling my board that, right? And so what is our advice to those that are not in a more receptive destination with a better bureaucratic structure who do have those stakeholders that give that kind of feedback? What's your advice to them to help them get to where we need to be, which is where we all agree that making the lives of the residents better is the objective? But I think the how is the part that I struggle with because I don't see the same path maybe that you guys do to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, and I fully acknowledge I'm in a very privileged position in a destination which is primarily tourism as our economy, right? So that gives us some inherent advantages. Our scale gives us some inherent advantages. But this situation we're in wasn't born overnight. It took a lot of people building alignment through relationships. And I think the one piece of advice I would give any DMO is we're in the people business. We're 100% in the business of relationships and people, and you need to be spending as much time as you can early on with the stakeholders that are going to have the ability to derail you as much as you can early on, right? Because if you can turn them from critics to advocates, everything else you do is going to be a lot smoother. And you know, Stuart Colvin, I've mentioned this before on the show too, when we were doing our rebranding back in 2019, 2020, Stuart Colvin is with MMGY, who did that work. He said, listen, if you share, people will criticize. If you engage, they'll defend. I don't think that's his quote. He probably stole it from someone, so I'll steal it from him. And you can say, I'd said it now. But the point is well taken, right? Which is, if I just tell people what I'm doing, they're just going to point out all the things that I'm doing wrong. But if I really sit down with them and listen to what it is they want to do and educate them on why we're doing what we're doing and what we exist and ask them for input and make them a part of the situation and the solution, they're not going to criticize it anymore. So my advice would be to figure out who your biggest detractors are, and however painful it is, go have a coffee with them and have an honest conversation and then build the relationship from there. And the, you know, the more time you spend with those detractors, turning them into advocates, the easier everything else will be. And all it's, again, it's that long-term thinking versus short-term. I can avoid my detractors today and I can focus and navigate around it, or I can invest the time today and then long-term I'm going to be successful. It's that analogy we talked about on your show, Adam. It's like the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time to plant a tree is today. And so we didn't plant a tree 20 years ago. We better start planting them today.
Adam, you know, DMOs are wonderful storytellers. And, you know, so when you're telling me, you know, the ones that roll their eyes when this is being discussed on stage, they haven't found the right narrative yet. They haven't created the right narrative. You know, I agree with what Stuart said. You know, take those people to lunch, take them to coffee, go, you know, sit down, figure out their hot buttons and incorporate their hot buttons into your narrative. Show them how, you know, DI, again, that tourism lexicon, what are the words that matter into the community stakeholders, and make sure that you're speaking the same language. We're awful at that as an industry, generally speaking. We've done literally dozens upon dozens of resident sentiment studies over the last several years. And one common thread when I'm talking to our clients and we're looking at the recommendations and what resonates, what doesn't, and so forth in there, I will always ask, what is your community engagement strategy in your communications plan for the next year? Pull out the module that's your community engagement strategy. And I'll tell you, 2/3 of the time I get a blank stare.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't think about that. Whose job is it in my organization when the school board's meeting to go sit there and talk about how tourism is helping solve whatever issues of the day tourism education is dealing with? Who's there? We go to the city council meetings, we go to the county commission meetings, we go to the meetings where everybody who has purse strings, control their purse strings goes, but we don't fish where our fish gather in our community. And so it's define the narrative to match the hot buttons of the community, the community leadership, and then go fish where the fish gather. It's that simple.
Yep.
So for those that are struggling, then if they want to do a more long-term project that has long-term benefit to the community, what they need to be doing is building bridges first with the stakeholders. So the people that you're avoiding, and Stuart, you actually mentioned this in a previous episode, you said the magic that you seek is in the things that you're avoiding. Is that, did mm-hmm. I nail the quote, close, or is
yeah.
that different?
Yeah.
Oh, close.
That's good.
All right.
Yeah.
And so if we're avoiding those stakeholders because we're afraid of them throwing a fit when we do something that they don't like or something like that, we're actually enabling the problem and making it where we have an inability to make the resident our primary stakeholder. So we need to build those bridges first, communicate a long-term vision, which, by the way, I think some of the people who might be struggling haven't done a good job of even identifying what that long-term vision is and how they plan to impact the residents' lives. And to your point, Amir, find that narrative, but the bridge building has to happen first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how many often do our colleagues really, that city council member or county commissioner or whoever, that's the naysayer, have they taken the time to say, well, what's keeping you up at night? Oh, that's interesting, because I just happen to have an idea that could take care of both of our needs. Are we going that route? I don't know. I'm not sure that we really are in most cases.
Yeah. And I think the mistake a lot of DMOs make is they think that community engagement is us going out into the world and talking at people. Like, mm-hmm. we'll go to Rotary clubs and present our latest big idea or whatever it is. We'll go to even some neighbor watch meetings if we're highly resourced, but we're there with an agenda. And I would say, no, you need to develop a culture within your organization where the people that work for the DMO are committed to this concept of destination stewardship, and they want to be a part of it, and they want to help it. And so they're going, and they are the ears on the ground, and they're listening way more than they're talking. And then they're taking what they're learning and then sharing what we're doing to solve the specific problems. Like, we tend to identify our own problems and then focus on them. What we need to do is identify the community problems and focus on them instead.
Yeah. Can I ask, Amir, can I ask you a question since I have you here, and I want to pick your brain a little bit?
Sure.
So you've done a ton of resident sentiment study, right? What actually moves the needle for residents?
Feeling like they are engaged in the process. Probably the most common thread that we see, and we just got back our 2025 national U.S. and Canadian resident studies, sentiment studies that we do in partnership with Destinations International. I'll be giving a sneak peek at the highlights at the Advocacy Summit coming up in a few weeks.
See you there.
But what's that? See you there. Okay.
I'll see you there. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, then let's go to dinner. So
I'm in.
So the reality is this. Generally speaking, again, I know there's communities where certain issues exist versus others, but generally speaking, overall, American residents are very proud of their destinations. They have a pride and sense of place. They think it's a good place to visit. They like it when people come visit. They understand that visitors do have a positive economic impact on their community. Where the disconnect lies is, they tell us this time and time again, the very first time they hear about some type of development project or tourism-related thing that's happening is when they hear about it on the news. They don't feel like they had a say. And they all tell us, they think tourism is a great thing, but it needs to be planned. They all tell us, again, every year ask questions, the majority will say it needs to, we think tourism is good for our community, but it needs to be planned. But at the same time, maybe one third will tell us that they felt like they were engaged ahead of time. Two thirds will tell us the first time they read about it, they heard about it. There was no public forum. There was no town hall meeting. There was no, no representation from the community at large on, on this committee or whatever. And it drives them up the walls. They don't need to agree with everything, but they can't respect you if they feel like they're marginalized. And that's the key.
Yeah. I think, my advice to any DMO is you have to develop a method of communication with your community. There's a million ways you can do that, right? You can build a really robust email database or a social platform, or you could have recurring town halls. And so it doesn't really matter how you execute it, but find what works for you and your community, and give them an opportunity to speak their mind, for you to listen, and for you to incorporate their input into every decision that you're making. And yes, that takes a lot of work up front, but it will yield untold benefits down the road if you do it right. So, and we're not doing it right. I'm not sitting here saying we're perfect, because we're certainly not, but we've started on that journey, and we're already seeing the benefits from it.
Right. And again, let's face it, DMOs are overworked. They're spread way too thin. We're asking to create new positions in organizations that didn't even exist before, all these burdens that are happening on a regular basis. But you know what? You tend to employ really talented people, really bright people, people that like to be active in their communities, people that feel they have a stake in their communities. Otherwise, they wouldn't be working most likely for the DMO. But so encourage them to volunteer for the church groups, for the local commissions, for the school boards, for the whatever those things out. You can create your own brand ambassadors, and then even look at your board structure. Mm-hmm. Do you have a representative from education on there, or from healthcare, or from whatever other issues? Some boards are well structured. Some, they may have one at large, from the community position on it, and everybody else is all tourism, right? So you have to look at that. There are so many easy ways. I would say easy because it all takes work, but there are so many low hanging fruit ways of engaging in the community, and to avoid just getting up there and here's our numbers, here's our figures, we're great, have a nice day,
So. Right. Well, and some of that starts with hiring too, right? Some of it starts with who you're bringing on the team. Sure. We always ask a lot of questions about Myrtle Beach in our interview process, and not to test their knowledge, but to determine their passion for the community. Like if there's someone that doesn't really like living here, they're not going to work on our team well. But if there's someone that really lights up when you talk about the cool things that are going on, they're like, oh, they have that fire that is going to be, it's going to be transferred to other people when we send them out to be part of the community, and they do volunteer and they do show up to meetings and stuff. So I think the people you hire have to be completely bought in, and then you have to develop a culture around that where you consistently talk to your team about, hey, I know you're just shooting a video to put on Facebook today, but really think about how does this tie back to our core mission of improving the quality of life. So that's my advice. The team matters, and their motivation matters if you're going to do this right. Sorry, Adam, didn't mean to cut you off.
You're fine, but just to Amir's point, if your board is made up of people who solely financially benefit from volume of travelers, volume of travelers will be the KPI that's most important. But if you make up your board of other stakeholders who actually benefit from a holistic improvement of the community, you're going to have a much better alignment to make the resident your primary consumer.
Yeah. And I think you can prime that too, Adam. I think, one of the things that DMOs do is they'll do a board orientation, and Bill Geist will talk about this a lot, how like your orientation isn't 1 hour once a year or whatever it is, right? It's continual. And I think one of the things we've had success at with our board is talking when they come in about constantly about, hey, when you're serving on this board, we need you to represent the community. And sometimes the decision that's best for the community isn't what's best for your individual business, but we need you, if you're going to serve in this role, to have that cognitive dissonance and be able to move forward in a way that benefits the community. And not every board member gets to that point, but a lot more do, because we have that conversation up front before they even start, even accept the role responsibility. We talk about what does it mean to be a board member? What is the expectation? You're not just an oversight committee for taxpayers' dollars. That is one of your roles. But the other is you're a steering committee for us, and not for us as an organization, but us as a community. And so we need you to represent the community when you're coming in, not just your own pockets.
That's the hardest thing, right? To get that board member to take off their my own business hat and put on the community. Mm-hmm. That's the hard one.
Well, it's not going to happen by magic, right? I can guarantee if you don't have the conversation, it won't happen. Most people are going to be self-serving. And I understand. I was a board member before I was an employee, and it took me a little while to make that switch. But it took conversations with the staff and other board members to get me to switch over to say, oh, I get it now. I'm serving the community. I'm not serving my own job interests, you know. So it can happen, but you have to be brave enough, have the courage to have that conversation. Well, I think 100%, Amir, we've destroyed Adam today. I think we, you know, him saying, I think I might be paraphrasing a little bit. I think what I heard him say was, residents don't matter at all. It's all about heads in beds. Let's get more in, and to heck with the community, I think is what I heard him say. But
I better see some comments.
I owe him a pity dinner now.
Yeah, a pity dinner. Yeah. I better see some comments supporting me on YouTube here, because that's a little bit of a misrepresentation.
No, your points are well taken, for sure, Adam and Amir. Thank you. I mean, you definitely know the resident side. We'd love to have you back on the show at some point to dig definitely. Even more into, I think, the questions Adam was asking about, you know, what makes a difference. I think that's something our audience is going to want to hear more about at some point. But we're out of time for today's show. Thank you, Amir, for being on. If they want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Longwoodsinternational.com.
Awesome. And then, Adam, how can they get in contact with you?
Adam@relicagency.com, Adam Stoker on LinkedIn, or check out Tourism IQ.
Yeah, tourismiq.com. Adam, I made my second post. So one of the questions I've been getting a lot from folks is, hey, this it's unusual for a non-vendor to start a project like this in the industry, right? For a CMO of a DMO to start an industry-facing project that on the surface doesn't look like it's serving his primary job as a CMO for a DMO. And so I put a post on Tourism IQ about the why, right? I think this show makes me a better CMO. It challenges my assumptions. It helps me answer the questions. And I hope it helps other CMOs. I hope it helps the entire industry move forward faster and with a little more thought into what we're doing. And maybe we can cast some of our bad habits along the way. But we entered into this as thinking of it as a love letter to the industry. It is part therapy session for Adam and me, but it's also partly a how-to manual as well for all of us to navigate. So I would love to invite any CMO that's in the industry that's watching this to come on and talk about what's bothering you or what questions you have, because that's really who it's for. We want this industry to thrive. We want us to be successful. And so we've had a blast. We're not perfect, but no one is. We're going to get better at each and every episode. We appreciate everyone tuning in. If you want to reach me, you can find me on Tourism IQ or LinkedIn, but please leave comments. If you see a post from us, if you're watching on YouTube or listening now on podcast, please leave a comment, leave a review. Be sure to subscribe so you get future episodes as well. But until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Did you end the recording there? Oh, you're still recording us.